Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome, welcome. I'm so glad that you are here. I'm so glad it's summer. Now, if you listen to me for any length of time, you know of my love for Christmas. Did I just say Christmas in June? Yes, I did. And am I sorry about it? Not even a little bit, because we're in June, and that means by the end of June, we'll be more than halfway to Christmas, and way more than halfway to when I put up my Christmas tree. I know all of you after Thanksgiving people are just, when is she going to stop? But listen, I love summer. I really love summer. And having my kids home, and especially at the beginning of the summer, where we're actually good moms, you know, before we've gotten tired and everything's gotten messy. This is just the golden days of summer. So I hope that wherever you are, whatever you are doing, that you are taking advantage of some time with your kiddos, because they need your time more than anything else. You think that they want to go on adventures. You think they want nice vacations. You think they want to be entertained every second of the day. You think they don't really want to talk to you. They just want to be on their phone or their video game. But I promise you, they want your time more than anything, even if they don't act like it. So I encourage you as parents this summer to lean in, to pursue your kiddos, to really try to spend time with them. And it doesn't have to be fancy. Listen, what works in my house is actually putting out a jigsaw puzzle. I put out a puzzle, and I know that seems like such an old-fashioned thing. They'll make fun of me when I put it out and be like, oh, nice puzzle, Mom. But let me tell you, by day three, I have little hands that are coming in to help me, and all of a sudden, they're invested and they're spending time with me. So I encourage you to spend time with your kiddos this summer. We are engaged in a year-long journey of developing 52 habits for healthy families. So I hope that you are in on that journey. We'll be talking about this week's habit later on in the week, so you don't want to miss it. That will be on Friday for Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I answer your questions. But today, I have a real privilege of being in studio, live and in person here, and we have a great show lined up for you. Now, we're going to be talking about something that may be a little more tender for some of you. We're going to be talking about pregnancy loss, infertility. But if that's not you and you think, oh my goodness, that's not me, please don't go away. Because if that's not you, I promise that's someone you know, whether you know it or not. And we can really gain some insight. The Bible tells us to bear one another's burdens, and in so doing, fulfill the law of Christ. And we are going to learn how to do that. If that is your burden, we will be walking alongside you today. If that is not your burden, we'll be giving you some insight on how to give encouragement and compassion to those who are listening. So today, my guest is actually the host of Hannah's Heart. Hannah's Heart is a radio show, a podcast right here on AFR to encourage Christian couples who are struggling with infertility or miscarriage. Now, listen to these statistics. This tells you that you know someone if this is not you. At least 1 in 8 couples struggle with infertility, and more than 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage. But there is hope. There is healing in Jesus, and you can hear that on Hannah's Heart. It airs on Saturdays here at AFR at 5 p.m. and Sundays at 11 a.m. That's Central Standard Time. But of course, it's available in podcast, so you can download it anytime. So right here in the studio with me today, we have Ann Cockrell, and she is going to share her own journey. And let me tell you, I've been listening to some of the episodes of Hannah's Heart, and each episode is packed with really powerful testimonies of God's faithfulness and a lot of resources to help walk with you along this journey. So many times in this journey, there's something that cannot be fixed. But you can know that you are not alone, and that we are here to walk alongside you. We see you. We care about you. We are praying for you, and you can find just comfort in knowing that you are not alone. So, Anne, I am so delighted to have you here in studio. Welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
It's so fun. We actually have already spent some time together today, and I am going to be on an episode of Hannah's Heart coming up. And, you know, Anne, I don't know how you did that. Because when we sat down and started talking, I thought, oh, this is something I really don't talk about very much from a personal lens, but you kind of pulled it out of me the last time that we were talking. So let's start with you, though. That's much more comfortable, right? Let's start with you, Anne. Okay. Anne, why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
So a lot of, if we have listeners of Hannah's Heart listening in, we started, my husband and I, Will, we knew we wanted a baby or two or three or, you know, whatever that would look like, that the Lord would have for us before we got married. That was a conversation that we had. People, kind of teased us for a long time because we dated for 7.5 years before we got married because we started dating when we were 15. And so,
yeah,
so people were like, when is he finally going to ask you? And so we got to that time, you know, of, okay, well, we've dated for so long now. We've talked about so much of these topics. But as we really got serious about marriage and all of that, of course, children came up in the conversation, and we always knew we wanted babies and kiddos, but we never did have, like, a certain number, like, when for sure or anything like that. But once we got married and, you know, enjoyed a year or two, just us, we knew we wanted kiddos to come into the plan, I guess then, you know, a year or two in. And at that time, I didn't have anyone personally related to me or really anyone in my little circle that had had trouble getting pregnant or experienced miscarriages. I had known of a few ladies that were closer to my mom's age who had a miscarriage or two, but that was all that I knew. I didn't know to kind of be on the lookout for that. And so as, you know, each month began to pass and no baby, no positive pregnancy test. That's when I say that's when things got weird. It was like, okay, you think this is easy, you know? I had actually worked for a pregnancy center at the time here in Tupelo, and it seemed to be real easy for those girls that we served daily, you know?
Yeah.
And most of them were there because they didn't mean to get pregnant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it definitely started hitting pretty hard of like, okay, this isn't going to be easy. And it you don't really know why as you're walking through it. You can't really see how this is making any sense.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, we had talked earlier about my own story of pregnancy loss. And, you know, I was just like you. I didn't really know anybody who had struggled with that. There wasn't any family history. And so kind of the expectation was, that's just what we do.
Yeah.
You know, we have babies. And I had my first two babies, no problem, no issue at all. And then I had a pretty devastating miscarriage after my second pregnancy. And I was shocked. I was just so shocked. And I remember being so upset at myself for thinking that I really had an entitled position with God. Mm. It was like we had a deal, God, this is how this is supposed to go. And thinking, how could this happen to me? And then recognizing, you know, all of the things that do happen. I think it's really, really hard. And you talked about working for a pregnancy center. You know, I worked in labor and delivery. I was teaching at the time. And it was so hard to go back and to think, oh, okay, I can't even compartmentalize this because I've got to go now and be happy for 3 or 4 families every single day that I'm helping bring life into the world. And that is a really hard place to be. And even my producer was saying, you know, I haven't heard you talk about this. And I think it is really painful. And people who don't walk alongside that, they can't understand. So let's talk about that first. Let's talk about people who, this is not their story. This is not where they are. They're either, they don't have kids or they didn't have trouble having kids. And they have a hard time understanding the pain that goes along with that. What do you say to people? How do you encourage people through Hannah's Heart, through your own personal story, to be sensitive to that and to understand that kind of pain that they're having?
So I heard, I guess you could say an example of, imagine that we're invited to a carnival. we're all about to go to this carnival. We can see the lights, we can smell the smells, we can hear the sounds, the kids laughing, like the rides going, the balloons, you know, all the things. We can almost even taste that carnival food because that's some good food that we
I
don't
smell
get
funnel
off.
Cake.
Yes, that's yes, that's what we're all doing. But just a few of us don't get to go in. Everyone else is getting to go in, and they get to fully experience that funnel cake and those rides and get to play the games and win the stuffed animals. You know, you're in there fully. But then there's one out of eight of that big crowd that's standing on the sidelines at the fence. We can smell the smells. We can see the sights, but we're not getting to fully experience what that friend group, what those family members, what, you know, anyone else who doesn't experience infertility is getting, you know, that full experience in that carnival. And I just thought that was such a good example because, yeah, when you're sitting here desiring children, what it seems like is a good desire, you know, like the Lord has called us to do this, to want this. And, you know, and I, being a mom now, I totally understand if you're a mom and you're like, I desire a break, you know, like I desire to sleep through the night, you know.
Right.
I totally get that now. But as you're awake in the middle of the night because you can't sleep because you're wondering, God, is it still not my month? Is it still, will I have a baby by this Christmas? Will I have a baby by next Christmas? You know, those things. When will I get to tell my parents they're going to be grandparents, you know? A lot of guilt and shame ends up coming into your heart and into your mind. As a woman, you think that you're failing your husband a lot of the time because, well, it was my body that didn't conceive, or it was my body that the baby passed away in, and like I'm supposed to be that baby's safe place, and I wasn't. Why? You know, and so, and I had a wonderful support system of friends that had no idea how to support me, but they did. They came and they walked alongside Will and I, their husbands even, to just be there and, you know, let me talk about a doctor's appointment or not let me talk about a doctor's appointment, you know, just different things like that. And so if you haven't experienced infertility or miscarriage, I would, and there's no way for you to put yourself in that place. And that's an important thing to realize. You're not going to ever be able to understand what this friend or sister or daughter are walking through, but to just be there, just be there, just be there to let them talk to you as you go on a walk, or to know that you're a safe place for them to really be honest and say the things that maybe they normally wouldn't say to other people because you're their safe place now. And that's the biggest thing for me. Of course, whenever someone would bring a coffee by or stop by my house and, you know, just fill my house with laughter or noise, because you would never believe how loud silence can be mm-hmm. when you're desiring that baby to be in that house with you. Silence can be so, so loud.
You know, that's a really good thought, and it makes me think of people, not only silence in their house, because I think about that when my kids are home. I mean, it is chaotic. I will never forget. I have four kids. I mean, I know I have lots of friends who have more, but there was a delivery guy that came to the door and, you know, it was just summer chaos. And he said, "Are you having a party? Do you run a daycare?" I'm like, "No, this is just my life." But not having that, you know, when my kids are not around, it's so quiet. Mm-hmm. But one thing I want to talk about, Anne, when we come back, is the silence that sometimes people who experience infertility or miscarriage, they experience from other people because we don't know what to say. And they're so well-meaning, you know, and they're thinking, oh, I don't want to say anything that's hurtful. And I know that that's sensitive. So I'm just going to not say anything and ignore that elephant in the room. But it's so hard. And now I'm picturing, Anne, these people standing on the outside of the carnival, like you said, and it's like they can't come in and we just say, okay, well, let's just move on and not say anything about that. Go on and do it. I think that's usually not the right thing to do. But when we come back, I want to talk about that silence or the converse of saying the wrong thing, like how you can avoid that. We will give you some tips and we will talk about how you can encourage people in your circle who are going through this. Don't go away. We'll be right back prescribing more hope for healthy families with the host of Hannah's Heart. See you in a minute. Little things can make a difference. A little note, a little smile, the small stone that David hurled at Goliath, and precious little babies. When you sponsor an ultrasound at preborn, your gift, no matter how small, makes a difference in a big way. Who will this little baby become? What giants will this baby slay? How about the mother who was spared from unspeakable sorrow because of you? You never know the difference you're going to make with a donation of just $28 to introduce a mother to her child through ultrasound, which doubles a baby's chance at life. All you have to do is take a few small minutes to make a life-saving donation. Preborn will take it from there as their network of clinics rescues 200 tiny babies every day and shares God's love with mothers. Preborn has a 100% charity rating, so you can give with confidence. Get involved today by dialing #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Make way through the waters. Walk me through the fire. Do what you are famous for. What you are famous for. Shut the mouths of lions. Bring dry bones to life. Babe. Do what you are famous for. What you are famous for. Adelaide.
Welcome back, friends. I am so glad to see you here today. Hello to all of you who are watching online. I am really excited to be in the studio today with the host of Hannah's Heart, which is really great. And we're sitting here talking with Anne Cockrell about her journey, about her struggles with infertility and miscarriage. I know that this is a very tender topic for a lot of you. And so I'm going to tread very carefully and just make sure that we're sensitive about that. I know this is something that is hard for a lot of you. Now, some of you may be thinking, this is not me. I don't struggle with this. I promise you that you know someone who does. You know someone who struggles with this. And you know someone who struggles with this. And so we're going to talk with you about how you can encourage them. So before the break, Anne, we were just talking about the silence that comes a lot of times with the absence of children. And so I want to talk about the silence that sometimes comes from other people who are very well-meaning, but they just think, I'm just not going to say anything. What would you say to that approach?
Man. Yeah, I think it's all, I mean, you can't ever go wrong with literally just saying, if all you know to say is, I'm sorry and I'm praying for you, it really mean I'm praying for you. Like, don't just say I'm going to pray for you and then not think about it again. But if that's what you really mean, like, that's all someone needs to know, because there's nothing you're going to do to fix their problem. There's no elaborate wording that you're going to say. You know, I'm always, if you have a good scripture to share, I'm not saying to throw, like, the Lord says, if you're faithful, he'll give you the desires of your heart. You know, right. People did that with me all the time, and I know that they all meant well, but it's like, but do my desires need to line up with his, you know, are mm-hmm. my desires? Because that's, from what I understand, that's what that Bible verse is meaning. Like, actually, our desires are meant to line up with what the Lord has for us, not mm-hmm. that I can wish for anything and he's a genie in the bottle that's going to give that to me. And so, I always encourage people not to give, like, false hope. Like, I just know one day you're going to have a baby, one day, because you don't. Mm-hmm. Even though that's very well-meaning and you want to be encouraging, but silence also does hurt when you don't reach out, when you don't just at least send that little text message that you might have felt like you should have sent, or when you felt like, man, I kind of felt like the Lord was telling me to stop by their house, but I don't want to be in the way. You're not going to be in the way. You know, so those people, if you're walking through infertility and we're talking day after day, week after week, month after month, I mean, of a reminder that, this baby isn't on the way, that your life, you're literally that person is needing to grieve the life that they pictured for themselves right now. And so every day I can promise you that person's hurting. And so if you would just choose to be uncomfortable, because it can be an uncomfortable conversation, but if you can choose to be uncomfortable because you love that person enough or care for that person enough, I believe that the Lord will bless you through that and bless that person.
I think that's such a good word, Anne, because I think just saying something like, you know, I don't know what to say, but I want you to know I care.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything that you need, let me know. And they may not tell you in that moment, but they know that you're a safe person there, because they know. I mean, I've walked in those shoes for a season of my life, and they know it's awkward. And I think I've shared with you before, Anne, there was one lady at our, an elderly lady at our church, and I had, after I had experienced pregnancy loss, then I started having trouble with my pregnancy. Mm. It's pretty significant trouble. And I remember her walking up to me one day at church, and she said, "Have you ever just accepted that maybe your body wasn't made to have babies?"
Mm.
And, you know, I remember I was devastated. I thought, oh my goodness, maybe it's not. Am I being selfish? I mean, I just went to this big spiral. But you know what I didn't know, Anne, was that she didn't have any children of her own. And I think that was her own question. That was her own experience. And she had been there. And in a way, she was trying to share that experience with me. And so I think it's hard. So I think if you're in that situation, it's important too to recognize the intent and the heart behind someone talking to you. Sometimes they mean the right thing. Because the other thing, just like you're describing, happens. And I feel like when people feel awkward and uncomfortable in the situation, you know what we do? We treat it like it's a spiritual pop quiz. Like, oh, this is a difficult situation. Right now, I'm supposed to know a verse and be able to say a beautiful prayer. Okay, what verse do I know?
Exactly.
Delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart.
Yes.
Pray. Don't be anxious for anything. Just pray about, you know, and that is really the wrong heart posture, because what we're doing is making it more about ourselves in the moment rather than meeting the needs of that person. So I think that's such great advice, Anne, is just to say, hey, even say, this feels uncomfortable. I'm so sorry. I don't want to say anything that's offensive, but I also want you to know I care.
For sure.
I think that's fine to do. Any last words of advice on that?
I think that's simple enough and good enough too. And you have at least become that person, a safe place for that person to give you a call, give you, you know, shoot you a text when I need a certain prayer, you know, or a doctor's appointment is coming up. I think that's what you've just done, is just opened yourself up to have that opportunity.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if there's a lot of situations in my life stage, I'm going to a lot of baby showers. And so sometimes you can go there. And if you know there's someone there that struggles with that, go up to them and give them a safe place to go and to come and say, hey, I appreciate you coming. I know it might be hard. Feel free to come and go as you please, you know, and just give them that acknowledgement. I think sometimes that is really helpful, just to be seen and to know that that's there. Well, Anne, I want to move back a little bit to your story, because we kind of left off where you were having trouble. Obviously, you are getting ready to have a baby, which is exciting.
Right.
You're a mom. So tell us the story arc. What has happened?
Man, so since struggling with infertility, which Kendra and I, the other host of Hannah's Heart, we say infertility impacts you for the rest of your life. Like, it's not like I'm done with infertility because now I've had a baby. Those worries and the trauma, I feel like, that you do walk through, they affect you now as you become a mama, you know. So after we struggled with infertility for almost 4 years, we finally walked through the phase of, like, dear God, I surrender. I surrender all that I have to you, even if that means I'm never going to have a biological baby. We had children in our home at the time through foster care. And I finally was able to do that. Standing at my washing machine one day in February, I finally did that. I just put my hands up in the air and I was like, God, I gave it all to you. I'm okay if I never have a biological baby. I'm okay, you know. And it was a really, really powerful moment in my life to fully surrender that desire. I feel like that was the first time that I finally felt freedom and, like, I'm done with doctor's appointments. I'm done taking this medicine. I'm done, you know, charting all the time. And I, as I'm saying this is my story. So I'm not saying you should just stop going to the doctor, stop taking, you know, I'm not saying all that. This is my story.
Right.
That was 3.5 years into doing all of that. But that was in February, and in May I found out I was pregnant with my Jane. Mm-hmm. And during this time, foster care was moving along to plans of adoption for our baby boy who was in our home. He was not ours at the time, but always felt like ours in our heart. But his plan got changed to adoption, and that was still a long road, like a year and a half road of his plan was adoption, but adoption wasn't ever finalized for another year and a half later. But during that time, we had what he calls baby Jane. And so that is Mark is big brother Mark. He is almost 4 now. And then we have Jane. And then very, very unexpectedly, my husband, this is why, like, I don't plan things because plans do not go according to Anne's plans. it was right after Mark's adoption and getting close to Jane's first birthday. My husband and I were sitting at our dining room table and very naively said, all right, we bought land. We've had land for about 3 years, too. And this year we're going to start building, like, no surprises this year. We're just going to, you know, get to know each other as this family, a family of 4. Little did I know I was pregnant at the time. And we did not know about our baby boy yet when we were saying all that. And then just a few weeks later, I told Will, I was like, hey, just letting you know, like, I don't feel right. Like, something feels wrong. He's like, well, it's not that. I think you're sick or something. But very unexpectedly was pregnant with our sweet John Micah. And what is crazy about that, it was very hard for me to accept. It was like, okay, with Jane, I had given that desire over to the Lord, and then I got pregnant, and it was like, okay, well, I just gave this to you, God. I just told you I was okay with not having a biological baby, and now I'm pregnant. And then to get pregnant so unexpectedly again, it took a lot. It was like, we're about to have 3 children under 3 years old. Like, people don't intentionally do this, you know?
Right.
If you have been following along with Hannah's heart, he was actually misdiagnosed while he was in my belly still with, I have not shared this before, but with something called gastroschisis, and that is where the intestines are on the outside of the body, and that is what we were told he had. And that we had been on the phone with Blair Batson and with Le Bonheur and gotten a plan, you know, like what delivery would look like. And I went in for decreased fetal movement here in Tupelo one day. And immediately they knew that it was not gastroschisis. It was actually much more scary than that. And it ended up being a tumor that we hadn't caught. His little intestines were actually perfectly fine. But with gastroschisis, we were told, like, if your baby has anything, this is what you want your baby to have. It's a small procedure, you know, after a C-section. So we had gotten plans for that made and all that. And so my appointment with the fetal medicine specialist was actually a day after John Michael was born. And so we didn't ever have the opportunity to get those plans in place of what that would have looked like. But I went in for a decreased movement on July 17th, and our specialist here in town we went back for delivery. Will was not there. I was there by myself. I thought I was being a little crazy because my appointment was the next day. I thought they were going to be like, now, honey, you know, we'll listen to baby, but everything's okay, you know. But he was born, and he was born at 26 weeks, and he lived about 27 minutes after he was born. And then we say that he went home to glory. So he is mm-hmm. in heaven, and we miss him every day.
Oh.
But yes, he so, so sweet, had long, long eyelashes, and, you know, we just got to know him in my belly, and we did not get to meet him this side of heaven, but we know we will one day. We talked about that earlier.
Our grannies are rocking our babies.
That's right. I just imagine our grandmamas up there saying, no, it's my turn, you know. No, it's my turn, you know. So, and we've had I have a good friend that her husband passed away in a car accident. They had only been married for a little less than 2 years. And she asked me, she said, I hope it's okay, but I think about Kurt, you know, up there playing with John Micah since he didn't ever get to have a baby here. And so we have people to say things like that. And they always say, like, I hope it doesn't bother you. But I think it's so sweet because that's the only way that we survive these kind of things here on earth is to picture our sweet loved ones in heaven. You know, that's a way that God provides for us here, is for us to be able to cling to that hope of my one day is coming, my one day of getting to rock my baby while he's, you know, alive, because his soul is in heaven, is coming, you know. And so I appreciate any time someone reaches out and is like, hey, I thought about your John Micah today. Now you have mentioned about us expecting, and so our producer Joe was like, if everyone, maybe just people just need to start an infertility podcast and they'll just get pregnant. Anyway, the day before John Micah's due date, his due date was October 30th, and the day before October 29th, we found out we were expecting this baby, and oh my goodness, that the shock. I mean, like, as you can imagine, so many different emotions behind it. So, like, of course you want to feel joy, but also I wrote a blog not long ago about this, but the anxiety and fear that also can immediately come, and then the guilt as a mama, like, but I haven't even grieved his loss yet, you know, just so many things. But then there's another baby on the way, so, like, I'm supposed, you know, so many mixed emotions about this baby.
Well, you know, so many things to think about, Anne, but I'm sitting across from you. I see the tears in your eyes, and I know that one of the most beautiful things about your story is that you said that John Micah was 26 weeks mm-hmm. and perfectly formed.
Mm-hmm. He sure was.
Real to you. And I have borne witness to many families who have experienced something similar. And if you don't come out of there and recognize that life is precious, mm-hmm. even that newborn baby life, I think it's amazing. And I love what you said about mentioning them, because, again, we're going back to that silence thing. And I have a friend, a very good friend, who lost her husband last year. And she said, I wish that people would talk about him, because mm-hmm. it's like he's just disappeared. Mm-hmm. But when you speak about him, you give me the gift of his presence.
That's so true.
And you say, his life mattered. It meant something to me. I'm honoring his memory. And I think that's true, whether it's a husband, whether it's a baby, just people that we have lost. When we grieve, we don't grieve as a people with no hope. Mm-hmm. We grieve as a people with hope, knowing we will see them again. And so giving the gift of that presence, I think, is an absolutely beautiful thing. Well, when we come back, Anne, I want to ask you about your husband and his perception in all of this, because we know men try to fix things and there's some things that they can't fix. And so let's talk about that when we come back.
And my father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Welcome back, friends. You know, I don't know what I would do without Christian music in my life. There are many times when I think, okay, I just need to put on some music and crank it up really, really loud, because there's a way that music speaks to our soul. And even in listening to these uplifting messages, when you're walking through a hard time, whether that's miscarriage, whether that's infertility, whether that's job loss, marital problems, whether it's kid trauma, whatever it is that you are walking through, know that we do not grieve as people who have no hope. There is always hope for you. And I really was convicted to share with you these encouragements from Scripture. We know from John 15:19 that this world is not our home, and that in this world we will have trouble. But we can take heart because we know that God overcame the world. We know we're called to a higher purpose. We know that all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. We know that we are in the midst of spiritual battles. We know that from Ephesians 6. And we know that we can be encouraged because, again, God has overcome the world. And I am reading to you from Psalm 73. You guide me with your counsel. You hold me by my right hand, yet I am always with you. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. So no matter whatever it is that you're walking through today, know that God sees you, God knows, God cares about the burdens of your heart. And today we're talking about the tender topic of pregnancy loss, of miscarriage, of infertility. I shared with you at the top of the hour that at least 1 in 8 couples are struggling with infertility and more than 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage. If this is not you, it is someone that you know, someone that you love, and we can walk alongside with them and carry their burdens. And our host of Hannah's Heart is here with us in studio, and she has very bravely shared her story. And I'm just so appreciative of that, because I know it's really difficult to share those things that happen. And again, just today in talking with you, and I'm thinking about how it's been hard for me to talk about my own journey. And, you know, I think about that first miscarriage that I had and being in a very cold and sterile emergency room in the middle of the night. It was chaotic. I mean, there were people there under the influence of substances who were violent. There were people who had dementia who were yelling. There were people grieving. There were codes going on. It's not a very nurturing environment, for sure. And then you're waiting, just waiting to find out the news that you don't want to hear. You're trying to hold on to hope. And one of the things I remember most from that day, Anne, is my husband just sitting over on the side, and there's so much physically, you know, going on with you, and they're just kind of trying to stay out of the way, but they want to help, but they don't know what to do, and they feel helpless. And how did your experience with that with your husband go? How do you encourage those husbands who want to fix things so badly but can't fix this? How do you walk through that?
I will say, I think if Will was sitting right here, he would say, I had to learn that I couldn't fix it, you know, because it's hard. I do feel like in the very beginning, it was like he tried giving me advice and like anything he could to be like, yeah, we could do this. We could go see him, you know, whatever. It is something that he had to learn as a husband that he couldn't fix. And I think that was a grieving thing he had to go through, an acceptance of, okay, I can't be God in this situation. You know, he had to learn, he really had to fully rely on the Lord to now take care of his wife, you know, a role that he committed to do, you know, the day that we said our vows, he committed to take care of me and to do, you know, all the things. But this is something he had to surrender and say, I don't know how to do this. I don't know what to do. But that's the best thing he could have done, you know, is to acknowledge that, to surrender that pride almost of like, I'm a guy, I can fix this, you know, to say, I can't and I don't know how, but God, I trust you with her. You know, my wife, who I love more than I love myself, I give her to you, you know, and he did that. And now that didn't mean he was not in the picture. He went with me to every single doctor's appointment. My doctor at the time would make fun of us. He was like, "Go, we just need to start calling both of y'all's names to the back," you know, because he knew it was going to be, you know, Will going as well. I know all husbands don't have a job like that. He goes to work very early in the morning and he gets off very early afternoon. So he was able to make those appointments. Not all husbands can do that. But he did not miss an appointment. He, you know, would be there with me for medicines and remembering that kind of thing. And never left my side during the sad times, you know, whenever I once again wasn't pregnant or, we went through 6 miscarriages, five miscarriages, and then with losing John Micah, we say we have 6 babies in heaven, but each one was different. They were all very, very early. I didn't experience what you're talking about. Ours were classified as a chemical pregnancy, and so that is different in just being a very, very early miscarriage. And so we normally would find out, except with one, we found out at the doctor's office by blood work. And so it was like we didn't have anything that we were excited about to then get sad about. It was just like, what do you do with this emotion? Like, yeah. We haven't told family, we haven't told friends, you know, but we know we've lost a baby. So now do we go to family and say, "Hey, just letting you know, I was, but I'm not," you know, so just weird emotions with that. But as speaking for my husband, you know, just definitely encourage you to not leave her side. Even, I mean, we might as women kind of be pushing off a little bit, like, "No, I don't, I want to be by myself. I want to," you know, whatever.
But we really don't.
But we really don't. We really do want you to snuggle up on the couch with us, or you know, he would bring me my favorite candy sometime, you know, just mm-hmm. or a coffee, or leave a note, because he's not there in the mornings. He would leave a note by the coffee pot mm-hmm. for me. And so, you know, doing little things like that that aren't necessary, but that totally mean the world to you as a wife.
It does. I'll give this for free. My husband left me a note one time. We were going through some tough things, and it said, "I don't need glasses because when I look at you, I see perfect." I know. I don't know. He may have gotten that off the internet, but I'm giving that to all the husbands for free.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Just go ahead and try it, because let me tell you, I melted like butter. I was like, it was such a simple thing, yeah. But that's just what he had left for me. And one of the things we talked about earlier, Anne, is that, I mean, my husband and I, we grieved in different ways. We worried in different ways. We responded to trauma and stress in different ways. And I had shared with you that my husband is the kind that if we're in the hospital, he's going to break the rules and take the rubber gloves and make them into a balloon and draw silly faces on them and make jokes at the time when it seems like it is really inappropriate to make jokes. But I'll tell you, Anne, people will start laughing. Like, they will start laughing. I'm very like, I'm going to plan. Like, I need something to plan. I need something to do. And we had to realize, this is a little preview of my episode on Hannah's heart, because that will be airing soon. But I had said that we had to make an agreement that we agreed to see the best intention in each other and to believe that the other one had the best intention, that their intention was harm us, but that their intention was they want to help, but they're helping from their skill set. So I had to be better about saying what I needed.
Yeah.
And that's so hard. As women, this is what we do. I know you can watch all these Instagram reels about it, like how men need an interpreter for their wives, because it's like, "Oh, how are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine." Fine means you're dead. Like, it means you're in big trouble, right? Mm-hmm. But I felt like, no, he should know. He should right. just know. And then that gives me affirmation that we're close. No, women, you need to tell the guys what you need.
Right. Spell it out.
Yes, exactly. I think that is so important to do. Well, tell us a little bit about Hannah's Heart and how your journey turned into a podcast and what kind of expectation people can have who follow along.
So Hannah's Heart, I feel like the Lord laid it on my heart after I started working here. I worked just in, we call it donor support, and so I got to talk to our donors all the time. As I, you know, was just here day after day, but also feeling like I was alone in the struggle with infertility and miscarriage, and we were walking through that. And I did actually, before I took the position at AFA, I told him, I was like, we are walking through foster care and infertility. I'm going to have random court dates. I'm going to have random doctor's appointments. You know, like, that's going to have to be okay, you know, with scheduling wise. And AFA was so sweet to me, you know, in understanding that, okay, today I'm just randomly going to have to go to court, you know. So during that time, I think I'd been here maybe a year or two and went to leadership, went to Wesley Wildman and told him my idea. And I thought he was like, I just said, I think we should offer this. Like, it's something that's not talked about. And AFA talks about a lot of hard things. And, you know, here's an idea. There you go. Run with it. And he was like, all right, bring me some ideas and we'll get started. And I was like, oh, no, not me. Not me. I'm not on the radio. I'm in donor support. But, like, you know, one of your radio hosts could talk about it. And he was like, no, you know, you're the one that brought me this idea. Let's see what we can do with it. And so I was like, what? I was not meaning this. It was totally out of my comfort zone to be on this side of the radio. But he definitely pulled me out of my comfort zone for that, and definitely getting ready for Hannah's Heart and meeting Kendra, and everybody knows Jade, who's been in and out of Hannah's Heart multiple times. She's always a part of Hannah's Heart, but she getting to know those ladies, oh my goodness, was so good for my heart. And if you are walking through infertility and feeling so alone, when you finally do meet your people who are right there with you, it is such a God thing, and just so, like, goodness, thank you, Lord, that I was able to meet them and walk through doctor's appointments together and celebrate with each other, but also cry with each other when needed. And the Lord used Hannah's Heart to grow my relationship with Him by digging in His Word and really having to get into what is infertility for other people? Like, what does it look like? What does miscarriage look like? You know, those kind of things. And so if you listen in, we start the show by talking about that we started out as an infertility miscarriage podcast, but we have definitely grown to really cover just how God grows families differently, and sometimes how He chooses not to grow those families in numbers, but in different ways. Every family is so unique, and so we want to bring that uniqueness and bring God the glory for each family and how we operate so differently, but that we're all striving to bring glory to the Lord at the same time. And so we've talked about foster care and adoption, overseas adoption. We've talked about singleness. We've talked about child loss. Some families experience everything in the book. Some families have experienced one miscarriage, but that one miscarriage is worth sharing about. And so I've had people on be like, my story doesn't compare at all to your story, to her story. You know,
that's kind of,
like,
the point.
Right. I still need you on, you know, just because you've experienced a early miscarriage and I'm doing quotes by saying, and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's not just it. That's a life. As a Christian, we believe life begins at conception. And so that life needs to be talked about and grieved and hoped for and all the things, just as someone who's walked through everything in the book.
Well, Anne, you are about to have a baby, which is exciting. And we've talked about all of the anxieties that come along with that, especially someone who's had experiences like you do. There's more fears and mm-hmm. worries that come along with that. I've told her that I'm very disappointed she didn't have the baby live on the show. I mean, I'm ready. I could do it. The board operators are all, oh, no.
Don't do that.
Yeah, but Anne, I would love to pray for you. And I invite our listeners to join in and to pray for Anne and for her family. Family and for our ministry. Dear God, we just thank you so much for Anne. We thank you for Kendra. We thank you for Hannah's Heart. We thank you for the way that you have blessed them and kept them. Lord, we know that you know every step, every thought they have, every fear, every worry, and you know every hair on this little baby's head. And God, I just pray that you would go before Anne and her family. I pray for an uneventful delivery, Lord, that's just filled with joy. I pray that you would give her caregiving team wise minds and skilled hands and compassion. compassionate hearts. God, I pray that you would continue to use their story for their good and for your glory. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. And thank you so much for being with us, for sharing your story. We will continue to pray for you. I invite all of the listeners to continue to pray for Anne and for all of the families, you know, who are in a stage where they're growing their family or trying to grow their family or growing into a new stage. We're all growing and changing, and we are going to be right here on the Dr. Nurse Mama Show to help prescribe hope for healthy families. So we cannot wait to see you tomorrow. I will be right back here, and we'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.